Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Today it's midday on Cars with John Davis, our good friend and the host of Motor Week on MPT and PBS. Motor Week is the longest running automotive show on television, and a week from Saturday, November 8th, the show will air a special anniversary episode celebrating 45 years of dispensing automotive advice and covering the automotive industry. Today on Midday, we'll take your questions and comments about what you're driving and perhaps what you're hoping to drive. You can give us a call. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780, or you can drop us an email, midday@wipr.org. We'll talk about tariffs. We'll talk about how to care for your car as winter approaches and the outlook for EVs. Ford has reported, for example, that its EV business lost $3.6 billion in the last 9 months. China is making huge headway in the European market, and the U.S. government has backed off its support. Those tax subsidies, they are no more. So where's all this leading? But first, let's celebrate 45 years of Motor Week with John Davis. He is the creative force behind this great program. He's been the host and executive producer since the show's inception back in 1981. And John Davis joins us on Zoom. Hey, John, welcome back and congratulations.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate that. And it's great to be with you today.
Of course, you began hosting this program when you were 12, 45 years ago. You know,
yes, that's our little secret.
That's right. I mean, what's your feeling about reaching these milestones? You know, the zeros and the fives are important. But how are you feeling after 45 years of this?
Well, in some aspects, I feel like it was really only yesterday, 1981, and even before that, 1978, when we actually did the pilot for Motor Week. And I thought maybe it would be something we'd have a good time doing for about 5 years, playing with cars. You know, what grown man doesn't want to do that? And here we are 45 years later, and it's just shot by even faster than an EV can accelerate.
And, you know, of course, the way people drive, what people drive, how people drive has changed dramatically in those 45 years. I mean, the place of the car in American culture, have you seen it, change dramatically? I mean, in the 1950s, when you know Eisenhower was building the right network of highways, interstate network, sort of established the car as a real American symbol of opulence, of wealth, transformability. I don't know. What's your sort of cultural take on the place of automobiles in American culture?
Well, I think for a lot of people, and maybe even still the majority, the automobile represents more than just a way to get from place A to B. It is it reflects who they are, what their values in life are. It's the American love affair with the automobile, and it has continued. But I'd also think that a larger section than, say, when we went on the air, maybe it's 20% now, maybe it's more, are looking at the vehicles really in a super, super practical, what can they do for me, more like an appliance. And that used to be a terrible thing when we thought about it, because it's not very sexy or romantic. But what's happened is those people looking for appliances have spurred the growth of things like safety technology and communication technology in the cars, because they want more and more of the practical aspects. I think EVs, in particular, Tesla coming along and showing that an electric vehicle could appeal to folks with money that just didn't want something that you could plug in because it was cheap to operate, that has spurred this appliance-like mentality. And so I don't think that's been all bad, because with that also has come the average vehicle can just do so much more. I mean, all-wheel or four-wheel drive is so commonplace now. It used to be something that only a few trucks and a very few SUVs have. So the automobile has changed as American culture has changed, but I guarantee you, looking at all the numbers, it's still just as an important tool, one way or the other, in our lives than it as it's always been. It's just the focus has changed for a substantial part of the consumer.
And of course, your program has evolved and changed. You have some
Yes.
things that are still cooking, but some of the features that you've had on the show for a long time, Over the Edge with the reporter Greg Carlos. You have Stephanie Hart, who does kind of lifestyle things. You've got Brian Robertson, Tire Tracks is a very popular segment. The way the media covers cars. I mean, Motor Week as a program has a lot of imitators. You all have picked up dozens and dozens of automotive journalism awards over the year, but the years. But the way people are learning about cars. Now the information that's about cars on the internet now is changing the relationship
Yes.
between sellers and buyers in a pretty dramatic way, isn't it?
Absolutely. When we went on the air in 81, we were the alternative media. The magazines and the newspapers, they sort of looked down their nose at us because TV was not known for any kind of in-depth reporting on the automotive industry, and what reporting they did do was usually pretty negative. Now, of course, the alternative media is anybody that's got the access to a YouTube site that can do a nice little walk around with a smartphone and act like they've know all about vehicles, and maybe with the help of AI, which is something, it's a new wrinkle that is reshaping things yet again. So now we're the old media, along with anything that's in print. But what we've found is the audiences and the taste for automotive information goes in cycles. It goes from wanting everything in depth, where the traditional media shines, to just the facts and superficial, and that's short form, and things like YouTube work very well on that. But now we're starting to see consumers going back the other way again, wanting more and more information. So it has not been a static process, even as we've seen a revolution in the way information is delivered. And we're individuals, so we now deliver on anything that's got a screen, be it our app or be it our YouTube channel or our website or the PBS websites and apps. If you've got a screen, you can see us, and that's so we're adapting with how consumers want their information.
John Davis is my guest. He's the host, producer, and creator of Motor Week on MPT and PBS. If you have a question or a comment about cars, one of the ones that you're driving, or one of the ones perhaps you'd like to drive at some point in the future, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. So, John, I couldn't resist. Let's listen to a little clip from the very first episode of
Oh,
Motor Week
no.
back in 1981. For listeners who haven't seen this on YouTube or won't have a chance to see it when it airs on PBS on the 8th of November, John has a full head of dark hair. It's a lovely thing to see. But here's part of what you had to say in the very first episode of Motor Week.
Motor Week, television's automotive magazine, with your host, John Davis.
Welcome to Motor Week. I'm glad you're with us. This is a television series for people who love cars and for those of you who just like to find out a bit more about them. Each week, we'll have our own road test of new models. Our chief mechanic, Pat Goss, will tell us how to keep our cars in good repair. And Joyce Braga will give us a close look at other new products on the automotive scene. So let's get things moving now with our first Motor Week road test. For months now, you've probably been hearing the term world car. Well, that's the auto industry's name for a car that's put together in different countries from parts made all over the world. The best known of these has to be the Ford Escort. It's currently the top-selling car in America. The basic Escort starts at $5,500, but can climb to the near $10,000 mark with options. The subcompact comes with a European-designed 1.6-liter four-cylinder engine and a Japanese-designed four-speed overdrive manual, or an American automatic.
It's timeless, John. It's completely timeless. That's fantastic.
It really is.
And one would be hard-pressed to find a Ford Escort on the road today, I would imagine.
I think so. I think Winter Salt's probably taking care of just about all of them by now. We did actually find one in quite good shape for our anniversary show, so. Well, that was a good thing.
It's good to know that, you know, a few of them have survived. But, you know, it was a great concept back when it started, and it's remained a great concept because clearly it's very popular. 90% of the PBS stations around the country carry it. You get millions of views on your YouTube channel. You're on Prime Video. There's plenty of ways of accessing the program and the apps, as you mentioned. Let's go to the phones. We always have lots of folks checking in with Midday when you're on the show, John, and we really appreciate you and them. Let's start in Frederick with David. Welcome to the program with John Davis.
Hey, John, I'm really glad for your success with the show. It's been a wonderful show for me to watch. I currently
Thank you,
drive
David.
A 2004, oh, you're welcome, 2004 Toyota Tundra, and I'm not calling about that car except to say one of the reasons I like it is because it doesn't treat me as a data point. All the new cars today come with subscription services, and they're marketing things to me while I'm driving. They're listening to me talk about a picnic and telling me where to pick up a watermelon. Is there a way to turn that off so that I don't have to also think about my car turning me into another marketable commodity?
Probably deep down in some of the menus, you probably can turn some of it off. But believe me, the automakers want that avenue. And in the future, it's going to become even more so. I know that automakers want to have the option of tracking where you drive. And if they have a sponsor of a restaurant that's down the street, letting you know that they're approaching that restaurant. Those are things that, unfortunately, we probably can look forward to. I'm sure the automakers will be forced, either by legislation or by consumer revolt, to be able to turn some of that off. But in this age of interconnected automobiles, which is only going to get more so, I don't think you're going to be able to avoid it 100%.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, one of your options, of course, is rolling up in a fetal position and hiding under a table. That's pretty effective. Yeah. We just did a show about data privacy, data security yesterday, and it's harder and harder to keep the information that we have from companies who sell it. You and I have talked about this before. I bought an oven for my house, and the oven had to be connected to the internet, which means that the GE company that makes this silly little oven has information about me, and they have to have that information in order for me to use the oven. It simply won't work without my connecting to the internet. John Davis is my guest. We're talking cars today here on Midday. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Let's go back to the phones to our good friend Tom in Mount Vernon. Welcome to the show with John Davis.
Thank you so much. And I'd like questions for Mr. Davis. It has to do with emission control stations. The price for emission control inspection keeps going up, but automobiles have better and better emission controls on them all the time. They also have indicator lights on your dash. If you have a problem with your emission control, the light comes on. So if you go to emission control, you got to pay a lot of money for the inspection. And if there's something wrong, they'll send you to a mechanic. And you have to have it fixed. And you're going to do that anyhow because your check engine light is on. So, like, you're paying for the inspection, and then you're going to pay for the mechanic anyhow. So why have the emission control stations when cars are so modern? They have so much emission control equipment on them, and they have indications that when there's a problem, they let you know. Why do they still have emission control stations?
Well, that's a very good question, and you probably remember that the former Maryland governor did away with having to get the vehicle inspected right after it was new. I think they went from you didn't have to do it after the first year, they went to the second or something like that. And that was a recognition that new cars are so clean when they leave the factory and the systems now are so good that failure is not very likely. I think the reason you still have it, besides we still have this inspection, besides the fact that there are mandates from the federal government that probably force that, is because there is a revenue aspect to it. It's true that cars will alert you actually even before you have a true emissions control problem, but there's no guarantee that people will actually look at those orange or yellow lights and go do something about it. So you could make the case that the inspection forces people to keep their cars clean, especially as they get a little bit older in the 5, 6, and 7 year time frame. So I think there's a variety of reasons why we still have to go through that. But remember, the entire program started because of federal clean air mandates, and they are still in place.
Yeah, it's a good point, Tom. And I think John's point is also excellent. I mean, if we don't monitor what people are doing, and if you're spewing harmful emissions into the environment, you're breaking the law. I think a lot of it is making sure people are in compliance with the law. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more. Before we go to a break, this word from Valerie, who says we need to acknowledge the public radio forebear to Motor Week, and that is Click and Clack, the Tappet brothers, Tom and Ray Magliazzi from Car Talk. They were completely beloved, as Valerie writes, much missed, and brought helpful car information to the average person. Their show launched in 1977 and ran until 2014, so they certainly deserve to be recognized.
And John, Tom, yes, and I have to tell you, they also had one other thing in their favor. They were hilarious.
They sure were.
And you know, I'm afraid that's a goal that we probably will never reach. Car Talk still reigns as the funniest way to learn about your car.
Absolutely. John Davis, he's the creator, producer, and host of Motor Week. It airs on MPT here in Maryland and on PBS stations across this great land of ours. We will have more with John Davis after a quick break, and you are welcome to join us with your questions and comments about all things automotive. 410-662-8780. That's our number here at Midday. Our email is midday@wipr.org. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
This is 88.1 WIPR, your local NPR news station.
And welcome back. It's Midday. By the way, coming up on the show tomorrow, one of Maryland's most lucrative emerging industries is also one of its most controversial. Data centers are powering the AI tools of the future, and Maryland has big plans to expand them significantly. And when they come, they're going to cost all of us a lot of money. I'll speak with Matt Doyle from the Maryland Department of Commerce. He's looking to bring more data centers to Maryland. And I'll also speak with folks from a coalition of groups that say that the true extent of the cost of data centers are not yet fully understood. Plus, the Grammy-nominated jazz singer Christy DeShiel will preview her set at Keystone Corner. So that's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. And if you've just joined us today here on Midday, my guest is John Davis, the creator, executive producer, and host of Motor Week on MPT and PBS. We're taking your questions and comments about cars, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. So, John, an emailer, Travers, says, some decades ago, if you got 100,000 miles out of a car, it was astonishing. And now, cars are lasting a lot longer with odometers turning 2 and even 300,000 miles. What are your thoughts about that? What has brought that about?
I think you could almost sum it up in one word, and that is competition. The average vehicle today, which is now like over 12 years old on the road, can easily go 250,000 miles or more with some care, but not with major overhaul necessary. And that's because the U.S. has been pretty much an open market to most all the automakers, and particularly the Asian automakers from Japan and from Korea, who really have kept the search for ultimate quality very high, and consumers that are more and more interested in quality in everything they interact with, which kind of leads into why are we working so hard to keep the Chinese automakers out, and because they may be bringing both quality and lower price to the EV market.
Yeah, the EV market very much upended by President Trump and his aversion to, you know, fuel efficiency, et cetera. He's got environmental reasons for that. He's got market and financial reasons for that. He says that the requirements to shift to electric vehicles is not consonant with what people want. He seems to think that people want internal combustion engines much more than they want EVs. The EV market has, you know, it lost Ford Motor Company $1.6 All right. billion dollars in less than a year. What is the EV market and the notion of tariffs? Is the combination of those two things, because tariffs are making all cars more expensive? How are they, those two things related? The sort of enmity towards EV cars and the fact that cars are more expensive generally because of the steel tariffs.
Well, that's a lot. So let me start with EV sales. Even before Donald Trump became president, EV sales were not living up to what the regulators wanted. And it was clear that the public was not interested in going all EV, or at least almost all EV. And that's true even in California, that still has some of their mandates in place. So the public said, why do we have to give up on internal combustion when companies like, say, Toyota and Honda and others and Ford have shown that you can marry electric power with internal combustion, reduce emissions, raise fuel economy, and not have to stop every 150 or 250 miles to spend nearly a half hour to 45 minutes charging up? So the public had already spoken. It was just that the regulators had not reacted. As far as tariffs, they are pushing up the cost for all vehicles. And I think that's going to probably continue because many of the electronic components, not to mention certain materials, we always hear about the rare earth materials that China has, if not a monopoly, has a strong stranglehold on. That's causing car prices in general around the world to go up. So you've got a lot of factors, but the simple fact is we're going to see a huge drop in EV sales because the incentives from the federal government now have lapsed. But it'll probably settle at around 10% this year, and maybe it'll start eking up. I never felt that electric vehicles would probably capture more than 20% near term. And I still think within 5 years, that's highly possible, but the prices of the vehicles are gonna have to continue to come down. And maybe that won't happen until we start seeing some of the Chinese manufacturers either build in the US or be allowed to import. It is having that effect in Europe, but it's also having the effect of really hurting their legacy automakers to the point of fears of bankruptcy. So it's letting the Chinese in is going to be a double-edged sword.
Sure. Let's go to Mount Washington to Claudia, who's on the line. And Claudia, I guess you're in the market for an EV. Is that right?
That's right. I'm actually looking at a used Ioniq 5. And yep. I'm trying to negotiate the price a little bit. And I wonder whether, since it's the end of the month, that will help me in the negotiation.
Yes, it should. But before you do that, I strongly encourage you to start surfing the dealer websites or go to cars.com and see if you can find a dealer that has a leftover model, a 2024 EV of either the Hyundai Ioniq 5 or the EV6 over a Kia or anybody else, because a lot of them still have some leftover models, and those have a lot of factory incentives on them that you don't know about, and it's possible that you could get a new vehicle for less than you're going to pay for a used one. But definitely the end of the month, today, tomorrow, Friday, they are always the key days because dealers are trying to make quotas where they get extra givebacks from the manufacturer. So this is the time of the month to shop.
Thank you for that call, Claudia. I appreciate it. And, John, as you mentioned, clearly EV sales are down. Auto News says that J.D. Power forecasts a 43% drop this month as compared to a year ago in EV sales. Is the hybrid, the plug-in hybrid, a middle ground that you think might end up being a kind of, interregnum in between fully electric and fully internal combustion?
I think all hybrids are, both those with a plug-in battery and those that aren't, because remember, those that aren't still see a huge increase in fuel economy. Toyota seems to be the brand that was right about this all along. They told us 20 years ago that environmentally this was the way to go. And if we had, if the legislatures had sort of looked at their advice, we probably wouldn't have politicized the American car like we've done. But clearly, automakers right now are rushing to get more hybrids on the market in the next 6 months. Well, we're just now seeing the Subaru Forester hybrid, a highly popular vehicle from Subaru. We've got a Hyundai Palisade hybrid that's coming. The Prius is upping its hybrid exposure by bringing back its plug-in model. So we're going to see a lot more hybrids for exactly the reason that you mentioned. It's a good bridge to the full EV future that will eventually come. But now I think that can has been kicked way down the road.
Of course, when it comes to the global market for electric cars, China is making huge gains. In the international market, they're selling them not only in China, which, of course, has a huge population that, is creating huge demand, but they're selling them in Europe. So American manufacturers without subsidies, et cetera, have less incentive to market them heavily here in the U.S., and they're losing ground in the international market. How much is that going to affect U.S. manufacturers' proclivity for making EVs down the road?
Well, eventually, I think the Chinese will find a way to come into the U.S. market. President Trump said early in his second administration that if they want to build plants here, he would welcome them. And that's, of course, what caused the Japanese automakers and the Korean automakers to build plants here, is so they could get around some of the earlier tariffs on their imports. So I think eventually we're going to see the Chinese set up shop in the U.S. They're already in the process of setting up shop in Mexico. So their arrival is going to happen. But when it does, we have to recognize that these companies are coming from a communistic country. They probably do have government subsidies, making it easier for them and cheaper for them to build and market vehicles. And I think we're going to have to be very careful about not allowing them to destroy what I call the domestic auto market, which includes everybody that's already building vehicles here. But for them to come into this market, if they're smart, and I think they are, probably the next step is going to be announced building EVs in the U.S. And I think that'll probably come sooner rather than later.
John Davis, the host, creator, and producer of Motor Week on MPT and PBS. We're talking cars today here on Midday. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Christopher sends us an email. I finally took the EV plunge and bought a 2023 Ioniq 5. It's quirky, but one of the best cars I've ever owned. Ultimately, though, I bought it because EVs are such a deal on the used market. Mine had 1,000 miles and was marked down $20,000 from the manufacturer's suggested retail price. I wonder if this will keep EVs viable in the U.S. for a while, even without incentives. And, John, I can't resist. I have a personal question about this because it turns out that this morning when my wife and I woke up at 5:30 to go, I was on my way to the gym and she was on her way to Johns Hopkins to meet some friends to take a run. And her car, which is a Prius, 2011 Prius, had an error message that said the hybrid system needs attention. And the dealer has it as we speak. We went over and dropped it off, and they're doing a diagnostic on it. But with all cars, used cars that, you know, have been around for a while, you have to make the decision, do I keep putting money into it or do I abandon ship and buy another car? If it turns out that we need a new hybrid battery, you know, the big one, not the little 12-volt battery, but the big battery, because that's a matter of many thousands of dollars, I think, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000. How would you frame that decision about investing another, you know, several thousand dollars in this used car as opposed to buying a less used EV or a new EV? Because we're inclined to get an EV or at the very least a hybrid car for environmental reasons, if none other.
Well, first of all, I have to ask you and your wife, do you want a new vehicle? Are you tired of what you're driving?
No.
Because if you, well, see, if you're not tired of what you're driving, then you have to weigh that $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 battery. And you have to say, well, you know, that's kind of making up for all the gasoline I didn't use. And that's less than 10% of the average new car price. And maybe it's only about 20% or less of what I could buy a used vehicle for that would fit my needs. So even though you're looking at a substantial amount of money, it pales in comparison to what it would cost you to replace it. So I think that's the kind of thing you have to keep in mind. And also, you know, is there something else about my hybrid that's going to wear out? For instance, a hybrid has a gasoline engine in it. Is that gasoline engine going to start causing me trouble? I have to tell you, it's a Prius, so it probably won't. So I would be seriously looking at replacing the battery, and I would actually pick up the phone and see if somebody can do it for far less than the dealer can, because they're definitely going to be on the high side.
John Davis, he's the host and executive producer of Motor Week, a good friend of this show, and evidently my own personal life coach here on Midday, and I am grateful for that. Motor Week in its 45th season now, and it's television's longest-running automotive series. We're going to take a break, and we'll have more with John after the break. You are welcome to join us with any and all questions that you might have about cars. 410-662-8780, our email midday at WIPR.org. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR.
And if you are riding along in your automobile, we are delighted that you are listening to us. It's Midday on Cars. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we are pleased to welcome our good friend John Davis, the creator, host, and executive producer of Motor Week on MPT and PBS. A special anniversary edition of Motor Week airs on MPT here in Maryland a week from Saturday at 5 o'clock and again on the 12th of November at 7:30. You are welcome to join us until the top of the hour with your questions and comments about what you're driving, what you're thinking about driving. 410-662-8780, our email midday at WIPR.org. So, John, I want to follow up on tariffs. The budget lab at Yale has said that the average increase in costs could average about $6,400 per car. The Center for Automotive Research puts that number at $4,400 per car. In your erudite estimation, are there particular kinds of cars that are going to be more expensive than others simply because of tariffs? Is it models of cars, brands of cars, kinds of cars that are going to be more expensive and impacted more by tariffs than others?
Well, clearly, if it's not made, assembled in the U.S., it probably will take the biggest hit. There was a lot of fear, and I think there still is fear, that many of the full-size pickup trucks, which is the single most popular category of vehicle in the U.S., many of those are made in Mexico. And the situation with tariffs with Mexico has not completely evened out yet, so some question there. All the vehicles have extensive electronics. They've got all these computerized accessories. Almost all of the electronics are made overseas, many of them in China or other Asian countries. So I'm not clear that we're going to see one particular brand or one particular type of vehicle get hit worse than the others, but the more electronic features it has and the fact whether or not it's actually made within the confines of the U.S. or it's considered imported, those vehicles will probably go up a little bit more. The real rub is, take Canada, for instance, and this new extra war against Canada over tariffs. A lot of vehicles that are assembled in the U.S. or in Canada, actually the parts go back and forth across the border several times before that vehicle's completed. And that what parts get tariffs and what don't, that's still trying to be worked out. So it's a real confusing situation. And right now the automakers are just trying to absorb as much of the cost as they can, but that won't last forever.
Yeah, you know, I've heard about that a lot, about the car going back and forth over the border before it's completely assembled. That alone seems like a dumb way to build a car. I mean, if you're going to build a car.
Well, it's not so much. It's not so much the car, it's components. Mm-hmm. For instance, suppose the engine is made in the U.S. and the transmission is made somewhere else, and they have to go to one country to get assembled, and then they may be exported back to Canada or something to get put in a vehicle. So it's not so much the whole vehicle as it is componentry, but that was made possible because of free trade agreements that allowed that cross-border collaboration to reduce the price of building vehicles.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller on the line who is a caller after my own heart. Charlotte is here from Baltimore, wants to talk about her stick shift car.
Yeah.
Charlotte, welcome to the show with John Davis.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, you are
yes,
on the air.
Yes, we can.
Okay, good. Thank you. Well, I love to drive. I've driven probably millions of miles back and forth across country 25 and a half times, commuting to Ohio for a year and a half every month, so forth and so on. And my question is, will any of the new cars have stick shift? I really prefer a basic vehicle because I love to drive. I don't want all the bells and whistles and the screens, which are distracting.
Yeah, John, that's a great question, Charlotte. Are manufacturers making any new stick shift cars?
The simple answer is almost none. And the reasons are, is number one, the take and the amount that they're selling has been around the 4 to 5% mark for years. Sometimes it will tick up as much as 7%, usually when people that have manual vehicles like Charlotte are in the market, and then it drops back to around 4%. But the real reason they've been abandoned, particularly in Europe, where they remain strong long after they were out of favor here, is that new automatic transmissions have become more fuel efficient than manual transmissions. And newer generations coming up, they weren't weaned on manuals, so they don't have any particular affection for them. Right now, probably the least expensive, most fun to drive manual transmission car you can buy might be the Mazda Miata. There's very few left, and they seem to be falling off all the time.
All right.
So unfortunately, I don't have good news for you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that answer, John, and thank you for that question. Charlotte, before we go back to the phones, John, I want to ask you about a story you did on Motor Week about the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, the IIHS, improving the way they do crash testing with all of these new safety features that are on, you know, the recently manufactured cars. Auto crashes in the United States are still a big problem. There were more than 39,000 crash deaths last year alone. How are they testing crash situations now differently than they used to?
Well, for one thing, they're doing, because this is a persistent problem, the fact that, yes, we have more cars on the road. Yes, they're being driven more miles, but still killing, you know, 35, 38, 39,000 a year. That number is coming down, but it's not coming down very fast. And we're still above the pre-COVID era. And what IIHS is doing is reevaluating many of its tests and crashing cars at higher speeds. They're crashing more heavier vehicles into lightweight vehicles, simulating that full-size pickup, maybe crashing into a compact car. They're looking at other ways that they can then go to the automakers and say, if you do this, if you strengthen this, or you make this electronic crash avoidance system better, you can do your part in reducing this number. It's all based on insurance claims that IIHS is funded by insurance companies, and they're constantly evaluating their current tests to see if they can make them better to whittle down this persistently high rate of fatalities and deaths. And unfortunately, I think the one thing that does stand out is speed. People are driving faster now, and EVs have contributed to the problem because they weigh so much more than a gasoline-powered vehicle, and being hit by one can do a lot more damage than a similar vehicle without an electric battery.
Let's listen to a little clip from Motor Week when you covered this issue of improving the crash testing.
Honestly, it was extremely jarring to watch the crash of the Volvo EX90 here. Now, IIHS is trying to determine how well the vehicle held up, if there were any injuries to the dummies, and they'll use that data to save lives. Crashes like that one are happening at alarming rates on America's roadways, over 39,000 crash deaths last year alone. And despite some small decreases in recent years, the number of highway fatalities is still 20% higher than it was 10 years ago and well above pre-COVID levels.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising that it's above pre-COVID levels. Yeah. And of course, there are things. I know my car, I have a 2017 Prius, it automatically brakes if I get too close to the car in front of me. And, you know, there are all sorts of safety things. There's a thing that tells me if I'm swerving into the next lane. But all of that said, we're still having a persistent problem. Yeah.
One of the things that IIHS is shifting some of their focus to is passengers in the rear seat, the second row, and even the third row. They really have not spent a lot of time analyzing how to reduce serious injuries back there. So that's getting a lot of renewed interest, because what they're finding is more and more of these fatalities are happening in the back seats.
We have an email from Patrick who brings up a good point. What's the definition of an American car now, since cars from Ford and GM are built in Canada and Mexico, and several non-American brands are building cars in the U.S.? It's a malleable term, isn't it, an American car?
Yeah, it really is. And there, if you buy a new car, there's even a sticker on it that tells you, you know, what percentage is actually, quote unquote, of its value is made in the USA. But I think for me and for most people in my profession, if it's assembled here, it's an American car because it's employing American workers. But, you know, again, you have a lot of popular models like the pickup trucks, which are made elsewhere. Minivans, you know, they're mostly the U.S. minivans, like from Chrysler. They're still made at a plant in Canada. So it's open for debate.
Let's go back to the phones. Lily from Hamden is on the line. Welcome to the show with John Davis.
Hi, this is Lily. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question. My husband and I have a new baby, and we have two cars, a 2013 plug-in Prius, which we love terribly, and a 2015 Great. Subaru Impreza. The Subaru now needs like new tires, new struts. It's making a crazy noise. It's going to be a couple thousand dollars to fix. And I'm curious if this might be the time to invest in a new car or a newer car that has some of the safety features y'all were just talking about. What we don't want is both of our cars to kind of kick the bucket around the same time since they're similar ages. And the Prius is a tank. Like, it feels like it's never going to die.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that call, Lily, and congratulations on the little one. So, John, as we finish up here, we got about a minute left. What do you think?
I think that with a newborn in the household, it's a great time to be looking to upgrading something that's got more of safety features, the automatic braking, the lane keep assist, rear backup protection. So it's a good idea. Do some shopping around, but go to your, take a look at Subarus first, since you already own one. They have all these features, and actually some of their features are some of the best out there rated in the industry. Look at the IIHS safety ratings as a good guide to which vehicles have the best automatic driver-assisted systems.
And John, our final question comes from Margaret via email. Are there current federal agency cuts that are affecting driving safety? What do you think?
Not to my knowledge, but I think if this furlough or whatever you want to call it goes on, that you might see some down the road, particularly in the supervision and the testing of new models and new devices. But right now, I think car makers are 5 years ahead of us right now in designing new models. So I think they've got time to catch up with any kind of regulation lapse at the moment.
You did a piece on Motorweek about winter care for vehicles. I was surprised to learn that you should replace your wiper blades as frequently as every 6 months. They give out after 6 months. That's sooner than I would have thought. Is that true?
Well, what happens is they get full of dirt and grime. So if you want to extend the life of the wiper blades, take a rag, put some alcohol on it, and run it along the edge of the wiper blade that hits the windshield. You'll be amazed what dirt you get off, and that will extend the life of the wipers.
John Davis, the creator, executive producer, and host of Motorweek. He's got all the answers. It's produced by MPT here in Maryland and syndicated on PBS stations across the country. November 8th, they have their special anniversary edition. Thank you, John, and congratulations again. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
And that's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, the future of data centers and the Grammy-nominated singer Christy Dashiell. Fresh air is on the way after news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
This is 88.1 WYPR, your local NPR news station.